It's Friday, and time to cap off the week with Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, happy to be your guide for today. Coming up, if it weren't for a chance encounter, perhaps there wouldn't be a new Raven postage stamp. Rico Wuerl gives us the backstory. Why Gloria Steinem calls the Alaska Women Speaks new anthology a portable friend. Also, the Juno Audubon Society's Birds of the Week. And here's what you can expect weather-wise. Partly cloudy skies tonight, lows in the upper 50s, with a chance of showers increasing over the weekend, highs in the mid-70s tomorrow, with possible evening thunderstorms. Juno Afternoon will be right back after National Native News.
Support for National Native News and Juno Afternoon comes from Klinken and Haida social enterprises like Sacred Grounds Coffee, Sacred Shine Auto Detailing, and Smokehouse Catering. Learn more at www.ccthita-nsn.gov. Klinken and Haida, local, indigenous, proud.
KTOO would like to take a moment to acknowledge that we are on the homelands of the Tlingit. In the borough of Juneau, we have the two Kwans, the Akwan and the Takukwan. KTOO studios sit on the ancestral home of the Tlingit, or dog salmon people of the Akwan. We acknowledge those families of the Tlingit who made use of these lands and waterways for thousands of years and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hanson Gress, Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha anikak gunish cheese.
Surely the ravens of Juno have been squawking all about this. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, it has been a big day for our community, one that has lots of hearts bursting with pride and joy. This morning, the U.S. Post Office officially released Rico Wuerl's Raven Story Stamp. In a downtown ceremony at Sea Alaska Heritage Institute's Walter Sobolev building. Years ago, when Rico Wuerl and his sister Crystal started the Trickster Company to showcase indigenous art, he had no idea where it would all lead, only that it involved lots of hard work. Well, yesterday I had a chance to talk with Rico about his art, his new postage stamp, and his relationship with Raven. First of all, congratulations. This seems like an artist's dream to have your art circulating around the nation and maybe even around the world. How do you feel about that?
I'm excited. It's a huge honor. And like you said, it's such a huge platform to be able to represent on.
How did this journey begin?
It all started in 2018. Things took longer than they should have because COVID, obviously, plans changed for the timeline. But it did begin in 2018 when a art director with the United States Postal Service discovered some of me and Crystal's work at the National Museum of the American Indian in D.C. And so he discovered our work in the gift shop there. And he said he was really drawn to the kind of the feel of traditional kind of design work, but in a modern context. And so that's where it all started.
Well, I know one of the things that you talked about when you and your sister started the Trickster Company is that the genesis of that was you trying to put Native art and culture into your everyday life. I remember that you started out decorating your skateboard with traditional designs. So isn't that the ultimate realization? What is more everyday than a stamp?
I like you framing it that way. That's really cool. Not only are we able to like make it everyday life for those around us, but I think they're printing 18 million sheets. So maybe 18 million people will have this artwork in their everyday.
I hope that we'll all be able to get as many as we want. This is a forever stamp, isn't it?
It is.
That's even more interesting that it's a forever stamp. Do you ever stop to think how in life something as big as this can be triggered by somebody seeing something in a gift shop?
It's pretty wild. I mean, a lot of what I do kind of sometimes feels like fishing, where you just have to like put the lines out there. You just have to like be present. You have to put yourself out there and hope that somebody in the right spot comes across your work.
That is really amazing. This was so random, but yet you're right, is that you have to keep fishing, keep looking for the opportunity, and just maybe something like this will happen. So let's talk about what happened once you decided to try to design the stamp. What was your thought process through that?
Yeah, so Antonio Alcala, who is the art director with the USPS, he worked with the USPS Stamp Approval Committee, I think is what they're called. And so they kind of had some general idea. So they came to me and they're like, oh, we're thinking about having, you know, multiple designs that kind of tell a story across the stamp. And so we kind of started off there. And I had decided, because it was such a national platform, I knew it was my responsibility to kind of represent.
There are hundreds of Raven stories that you might have chosen, but you settled on how Raven stole the sun, the moon, and the stars. Was it because that story just has more artistic possibilities?
So I chose the Raven story because it was a gateway to learn about Tlingit culture. Because it was one of the best known ones, I felt like, again, back to the concept of like representing and accessibility, that's always been something that I've integrated in my art, is making sure it's like accessible to Native people, but also to non-Native people. I felt like that there was a greater chance that people from all the way across the country who have no resources that towards like learning about Tlingit culture, you know, because they're just so far away, and that there would be the greatest chance that they would kind of be able to go online and look up what is the Raven story, what is Raven and the Box of Daylight story, and maybe be able to come across something.
So for people who are not familiar with the Raven Box story, can you recap it for us?
Yeah, very abbreviated. A long time ago, the world was all dark, and Raven had heard about this clan leader who had these celestial objects as treasures that he kept. So the sun, the moon, and the stars were in these boxes. And he ended up pulling off this mega heist and infiltrating the households and ended up stealing the sun, the moon, and the stars and releasing them into the universe. And the stamp is actually kind of at the climax of the story, where he's transforming back from a baby human into his Raven form and kind of like on the way out, carrying as many kind of celestial objects as he can in a kind of frantic moment.
So you capture a moment that is full of drama, but what is the meaning of that moment in the bigger picture to you?
For me, I like to really share the idea that Trickster or Raven as a kind of like spiritual being, it's not necessarily about like good versus evil or anything like that, as much as it's more about questioning the way things are and maybe making changes along the way. And it feels very humanizing. Raven's this supernatural being, but even Raven has these frantic moments, like where he's on the cusp of like success or failure with stealing these celestial objects to bring them to the world.
And yet you could argue that the objects rightfully belong to humanity. So right. So he was kind of like a Robin Hood figure, perhaps, in one of his many guises. But, you know, to me, and I'm sure this story means many things to many people, but it really is, to me, quite a spiritual story, because it's really about love. You know, this old man who stubbornly is hoarding humanity's treasure, and then Raven sort of disguises himself as a baby, the old man's grandson, and suddenly the old man's heart opens up and he's willing to let the grandson play with these celestial object. So I don't know. I kind of interpret it that way. And that's maybe what makes the stamp so special. How do you interpret that story?
I think that's another reason why I chose the story. I think there is multiple levels of what does the story mean. And I think that's another power of trickster stories. At what level are you processing it? Or the storyteller can also frame it in a way that he thinks the audience needs to hear. It can be about sharing something with the world. It could be about a grandparent's love for their grandchildren. It could be about clan relations, because there's always balance between the eagles and the ravens in Tlingit society. The grandfather would be the opposite side of raven. So it would also be about him not being able to say no when the opposite clan is making a request of him in a certain way.
And to me, it's also about being smart rather than using force to get what you think is rightfully yours, to use your brain.
Yeah.
And Raven has quite an interesting brain, don't you think?
Yes, I agree. Raven has a very creative brain.
Sometimes gets him into trouble. He's a little bit too creative occasionally. Mm-hmm. So now that you realize this ambition to get your work marketed all around the world, where do you go from here?
I am teaching myself some new skills. I'm spending time learning 3D computer-aided designing. I've spent a lot of time doing two-dimensional formline work and using Adobe Illustrator, various computer programs, and translating my work through those programs. I would like to start to learn a little bit of the sculptural side of formline.
Do you think that in a way that many Indigenous artists will look at your work as kind of a victory for them too, maybe?
I hope so. But I do hope that the people that do view this stamp, it does make them think about who are the Indigenous artists in their region and area, find out who they are, support them.
So I imagine that there are a lot of artists like yourself out there, as you describe, fishing every day, hoping for that opportunity. So do you think that this story is going to inspire them, that this one fishing expedition brought something into your life?
Yeah, I hope so. You know, I think just having that hustle every single day it's vital to success for anybody. So we have the saying, Igwe Juan, and it's like, have strength. I just hope people can kind of feel that message and keep carrying that into their work, into their things they're passionate about.
Sometimes when you look back on the past, you don't realize that all the things you're doing are someday going to contribute to your success. Was that the case for you?
Yeah, I think there's been a path, but I only see it when I look backwards. I've never really assumed a path forward. I've tried to be present and aware of the opportunities that are around me. I wouldn't have said I was an artist when I started Trickster Company about 10 years ago. And I probably didn't call myself an artist except for maybe 5 years ago. I started to a little bit. It was more like I was following Trickster Company and like kind of like putting design work in there through the opportunities that kind of presented me.
So how old are you?
37.
You're very young. So before you're not even, 40, to have an honor like this is quite an amazing thing. To have something like this happen to you when you're not even at the prime of your career, it has got to be a tremendous boost.
I keep saying this, and I hate to just keep repeating myself, but representing is just like such an important part of what I think my job is. And so I'm just trying to do my best to represent my community, my clan, my tribe, and I'm just gonna continue to do the best to represent as I can into the future.
Well, that seems like it's taken you a long way, that philosophy. So it can't hurt to keep the same philosophy. Now, one thing I was curious about is that stamp, the design on it, just seems to me it begs to be a gigantic poster. Because the post office commissioned this design, do you have any rights to be able to use that design in your own trickster company?
I did work out a license with the USPS to get the artwork. We will have it on prints and note cards and postcards. Nothing as big as a poster, but that has been requested a number of times. So it might be something that we have to add in, but 11 by 14 kind of size prints for now, at least.
Okay. Well, I definitely think that there will be a market for that, because that is such a beautiful stamp with the little gold stars and the ribbons around the raven. It just is an image that when you look at it, even though I guess Raven is stressed, it still makes you feel good.
Yeah, thank you.
So before we go, is there anything you'd like to say?
I mean, my family's support has been like the number one thing. I run Trickster Company with my sister and my dad and my stepmom. We do the kind of day-to-day work and grind and hustle of Trickster Company, and they're really the ones that kind of have held me up so that I could have the time and energy to take opportunity on when it presents itself.
So do you think this is changing you in some way? I mean, it's got to be overwhelming.
It's pretty intense. I've been getting interview requests since November, actually, when it was first unveiled. I don't know if it's changing me. We'll see, I guess. We'll see if I transform.
Well, Raven has the ability to transform. So if he's your mentor, who knows what could happen? Or would you want Raven to be your mentor?
I think there's a lot to learn from Raven, so I wouldn't miss out on that opportunity.
All righty. Well, again, congratulations, and we look forward to seeing more of your work out there.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Alaska Women Speak, a journal for and by Alaska women. Up next, 25 years of sharing stories. Listen to interviews on Juno Afternoon, or to see links to anything that we've talked about on the show, or to be on the show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org/Juno Afternoon. That's ktoo.org/Juno Afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Great to have you here with us on this Friday for some conversations to send you off to the weekend. I'm Rhonda McBride. And speaking of conversations, Alaska is a place where people who share interests or common causes are likely to be scattered far and wide, especially women from small communities. Maybe that's why Alaska women do a lot of networking. 25 years ago, that's how Alaska Women Speak got its start, a quarterly journal of poems, essays, photographs, and artwork by Alaska women and for Alaska women. Now, Alaska Women Speak has published an anniversary anthology from journals that span from 1992 through 2017. Some disclosure here, I have contributed to Alaska Women Speak, and I do have an essay in the anthology, but I am one of hundreds of women included in what is quite a labor of love for two of its editors, Mary Lee Hayes, who lives near Eagle River, and Angie Slingluff, who now hails from New Mexico, but she was right there from the start. Mary Lee, let's begin with you. And perhaps you can start by telling us what it took to pull all this together.
Well, Angie and I live in different states, so we had to rely on the telephone for a lot of our communication. And myself and another AWS supporter chose and selected different stories, wanting to have as many representatives from our supporters list, because many women have written and supported this little women's journal, Alaska Women Speak, a grassroots endeavor. And I thought, I want this to endure. I want to honor the women and supporters and put them into an anthology book. I was one of the managing editors, and so was Angie.
So, Angie, tell me a little bit about what it was like to collaborate with Mary Lee over the phone.
Well, occasionally technology would give us a fit, and she's on a Mac and I'm on a PC, so every once in a while we hit the interface issues, but we managed to do it pretty well over the last 4 years to produce this journal. Mary Lee picked the articles and does great editing, and I was responsible for the layout. I made the articles fit in the space we had available, and filled in some of the blank spaces with art and photos from contributors from the journal. So it was indeed a labor of love, and I'm so delighted to see it in print.
To me, it's amazing. It's, what, about an inch thick? And
2 pounds, 14 ounces.
2 pounds, 14 ounces, and about how many contributors in the anthology?
Probably 234 or more.
And that's what, just a fraction of all the contributors over the years. So how did you go about deciding what was going to make it into the anthology?
The quality of the article and what they had to say. And we also wanted to honor those that maybe had contributed many, many articles, or maybe for many, many years at different times, or volunteered their time. Our writers did not have to be famous. That had nothing to do with it, really nothing to do with it. It all had to do on, did they want to share their voice? And that's what AWS has been, a sharing of voices.
I'd like to add to that, that some people's articles, it was their first time in print, first time they were published. And several authors have gone on to be accomplished writers.
I think that is the wonderful thing about it, is this opportunity to get your voice out there in print. And many people, like you said, probably discovered that they had a knack for that.
Yeah.
Before we go any further, I'd like to read a couple of blurbs that are on the back of the anthology. And this one happens to be from Gloria Steinem. She writes, "It's a portable friend that brings insight and information into your home and helps find friends outside it. It's truly a voice for women in the great land." Gloria Steinem. So I have to ask, how did you get her to endorse your book?
Well, I was always looking for ways to increase the visibility of the Little Women's Journal. And so I simply sent it to her. I got her address and sent it to her, and she wrote that blurb back.
But that notion that it's a portable friend, I think she gets it, doesn't she?
Yeah.
What Alaska Women Speak is all about.
That's right. Yeah, she sure did. I will be sending her this book.
Well, the other blurb too is from Fran Ulmer on the back cover. And I like what she writes here. This book is an emotional journey through several decades of remarkable women's adventures, reflections, transitions, poetry, and art. For some readers, it will prompt memories of their own similar experiences, feelings, and relationships with places and people in Alaska. For others, it will be a tempting introduction to what makes Alaska and Alaskans so special and surprising. And I think that pretty much sums it up, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sure does.
So, Mary Lee, is this magazine still in existence today after 25 years?
Yes, it is. It's an amazing thing that a small grassroots journal of stories and poems and pictures is still in existence, 25 years worth of those stories and pictures.
So does the journal still have this tradition of coming up with a theme and then asking contributors to offer up material that fits the theme?
Yes, that's right.
So can you give an example of some of the themes over the years and some of the pieces that turned up in the anthology because of the themes?
One of the themes was women and their horses, and that was in 2012. And that ended up being a very popular theme. Women really responded to writing their stories or poetry about their horses. That was a really fun theme. We have had women in the arts. A current one has just been 8 Stars of Gold, and that one had about winter and when we can see the stars at night. That was just current in the winter issue of Alaska Women Speak.
It sounds like it's kind of a big treasure hunt. What will the theme bring in?
I think the themes are important, though, because that's how many people decided that they wanted to submit something. And the themes really drew in a very diverse audience of writers and contributors.
Well, I think perhaps it might be the volume of pictures. I'm someone who likes to visually see pictures. If we're going to have a story about a bear, I want to see a bear. If it's one of the stories which is about a plane crash, well, then let's get a picture of the pilot, the woman pilot in the airplane. For Angie to have the ability to put all those pictures in, it makes it a very unique anthology.
Angie, why was it so important to you to take all that trouble to work with all these pictures?
The pictures are representative of Alaska women, their activities, their interests, their passions. In the book, we did have a number of original photographs, so some pictures are very good quality, and some are not as good as we would hope they would be. And so part of my talent was finding ways to try and touch them up and make them look almost as good as they would have had we been able to scan from an original photograph. But I think no matter the quality of what you see in the book, it's still going to be a wonderful journey down memory lane and remembering people and friends.
One of the things I noticed among your frequent contributors, and I enjoyed seeing this, is how they changed over the years.
Some of us are much grayer than we used to be.
That's for sure. Mary Lee, what were your thoughts?
A book is something that lasts through many years. A magazine, too often we have for only maybe just the month that we received the magazine. And being able to see these faces again years and years later and many years into the future when we are all gone, to have the stories live on and the person live on through their voice and through their picture, I think that is such a wonderful thing to be able to give people.
We've been talking with Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingloff about the new Alaska Women Speak anthology. Some readings from the book when we come back. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride, and we are back with Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingluff, co-editors of a new book filled with material drawn from a journal called Alaska Women Speak. For a quarter of a century, it's featured essays, poems, photos, and art from Alaska women. And I'd like to continue our conversation with some readings from the anthology. Mary Lee, let's start off with one of your essays entitled Following the Path of a Piano. And let me tell you what a path that is.
Okay. Yes, I came to see and feel the magic of the Chilkoot, named the Klondike Gold Rush National Historical Park. But what intrigued me most, what gave me an incessant need to experience this land firsthand, was the story of a woman from that 1898 frenzy who insisted that her piano be hauled over the pass. What kind of pioneering woman was this? Not only must she have been brave and spunky to take on the hardship and dangers of this trip herself, but she must have possessed some kind of incredible determination in order to persuade other weary, worn gold seekers to assist in hoisting a piano up and over that long trail and steep incline. I've speculated about her strength of character, for regardless of every mile that her piano was hauled over rocks and rivers, never was there a guarantee that it would make it all the way to the Klondike. She would have to realize every step of the way that at any turn, the piano carriers could give up this load, leaving it at the wayside, as so much other equipment was left.
Yay, that was a great story.
Yeah. I've been over the Chilkoot, and I can't imagine what it would be like to haul a piano. It was hard enough hauling myself on the rocks that tended to move when you didn't expect them to.
You know, I think that's the beauty of this. You've got so many stories of women accomplishing amazing things. They offer a lot of inspiration.
Yes, there's a big variety. We really didn't have any one particular topic. We just took the different themes from the Alaska Women Speak journals, each journal having a different theme. That one was pioneering women.
So Angie, could you share your essay, Can You Hear Me Now? It's about your struggles growing up with a hearing disability. And based on our conversation so far on the show, I think listeners would be surprised that you've had some lifelong challenges.
That is true. That is very true. Okay. I'm reading, Can You Hear Me Now? Can you hear me now? I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. Could you repeat that? Say again, huh? To which some people respond, oh, never mind, it's not important. It's nothing, forget it. Ask a child to repeat what they said, and they think they've said or done something wrong. And you've experienced our responses, head nodding, yes, or uh-huh, to everything, or sometimes no, thrown in for good luck, the interested look. And the ultimate, the slight grin. Gail Hannon, a deaf Canadian performance artist, says, everyone wants to know what the Mona Lisa is smiling about. We know she couldn't hear a thing.
So this is sort of a woman-to-woman sharing of things.
The book has some of these stories, which I think are important to include. It's definitely all-inclusive, and it gives one the avenue to express themselves, whereas sometimes they may not have that.
So when the journal started, it was a very different environment 25 years ago for women. It was hard for them to get published, harder for them to get recognition. What's the difference today?
I think it's interesting to note that Alaska Women Speak came out of the first women's feminist conference that Karen Carlisle, Susan Johnson, Dorothy Jones helped get started. And their stories are in the beginning of the book. We call them our godmothers. They got us started. And then it took off from there and it's continued. So women have stories to tell and women have stories they want to hear.
One of the things that's so interesting about this is the diversity of people that you have, including some articles by Alaska Natives. Could you share one with us?
Sure. From Ellen Paniak. She wrote an article on taking a traditional art to the craft fair. The best part of selling at a craft show is being able to educate the public about the ivory that I work on for the sale. I give a little history of the art and or the piece of ivory on which I have done the etching. The actual art of scrimshaw was taught to the natives by New England whalers who first plied the Arctic waters in the 1700s in search of whales. They had perfected the art form on sperm whale teeth. The native peoples took the art form and ran with it. My grandfather taught me the craft.
That's lovely. And of course, Ellen Paniak has since passed.
Yes.
So it must be wonderful to have this record of her and many others in your book.
Yes, many of the women that we feature have passed, and we wanted to have their voices continue. And to us, there was no better way to have their words and voices live on other than to put them in a book and put their picture with it.
I think one of the wonderful things about this anthology is the mix of cultures. Not only do you have Alaska Natives sharing their stories, but you have women from all over the state talking about their experiences in Alaska Native culture. And I was invited to write an essay, I think, in the month that you were celebrating diversity in Alaska. And so I'll share a little bit of mine. Mine is called Wiggling Your Eyebrows in Bethel and Other Lessons in Diversity. And in case you don't know, in Yupik culture, sometimes people answer questions by raising their eyebrows up and down to indicate yes. And if you're a non-native, it seems to express uncertainty. So you keep asking over and over the same question and people keep wiggling their eyebrows. But anyway, let me read from this. I was talking about my Yupik mentor, Alexi Isaac, who has since passed on, but I have wonderful memories of him, and it was great to be able to share that in this essay. Also, in traditional Yupik culture, it's considered rude to respond too quickly to a question. It means you haven't fully weighed in. Probably the world would be better off if we took more time out to pause and reflect. One of the many values the Yupik culture has to teach the world. And I was slow to learn. Ever trying to get Yupik reporters to use shorter sound bites in their stories like they do on the network news, they resisted. Yupiks like to hear people out fully. And of course, this was written of my time as a reporter in Bethel. But, you know, it's just such a great opportunity to share these stories. And mine is one of many of hundreds. So we have spent a lot of time talking about the wonderful essays and photographs, but there are quite a few poems in this anthology, and they're so wonderful. Are there any that you'd like to share with us?
Yes. One by Kirsten Christensen. She has several in the book scattered throughout. She's a poet out of Sitka, Alaska, and it's called Poetry and Wind. Rise early under dark skies to tend dogs and savor the morning's coffee, bitter tinged and hot. Consider the poetry that needs writing across blank paper, page, words of precision, and balm. The house is quiet, still, but for warm January winds, clatter of chime in tree, crack against window, still coffee cools.
Boy, images we can all relate to. The poetry in the wind and the poetry in the moment. How about you, Angie? Is there a poem from the anthology you'd like to share with us?
Well, I like Gabriel Barnett's poem, Discontent. When distant jets and bumblebees or gossiping leaves agitate against the stillness of Sunday afternoon, when roasting meal scents the air, heavy with promise of a family meal, you slip in, the door whispering, beyond aspirations to domestic ease, gathered under one roof, home simply, together before the weekly shuffle, adventure awaits, luring me toward that cold plunge, chasing unknowns.
Thank you for reading that. So in wrapping things up, are there some thoughts you want to leave with us?
It's exciting for me to know that this book is going to be in the Library of Congress. So it will be a continuing legacy of the efforts, not only of Mary Lee and I to put it together as a book, but of all the women who've contributed their spirit, their soul, their heart, and put it on paper so that we could put it together as a book.
How do we get this anthology? Will we find it in bookstores?
Yes, and you could also find it through Ember Press, emberpressbooks.com.
All right, well, I want to thank you, Mary Lee Hayes and Angie Slingluff, both editors, co-editors of the Alaska Women Speak anthology of photographs, art, and words from the journals 1992 to 2017. Quite an impressive body of work. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, in our Juneau Audubon Society's Birdwatch, the spotlight is on three different shorebirds. You're listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. It's time to send you off to the weekend. And as we have every Friday this summer, we're checking in with Brenda Wright from the Juneau Audubon Society. It is hard to believe, but we never run out of different birds to talk about. Hello, Brenda.
Hi, Rhonda. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yes, and I'm always curious about what kind of birds your binoculars are focused on.
Yeah, well, right now, this is a perfect time to go wherever the salmon are, because the gang's all there. Everybody, all the gulls, all the shorebirds, all the eagles, everything that can possibly enjoy a salmon is where they are. If you don't have an easy access place, try DiPAC. They're all there, too.
So is it comical to watch them sometimes?
Oh, my gosh. You know, they do tend to fight a little bit, or can I share that? No. Can I steal it from you? I'll try 14 times.
So if you're not fast enough to get a good picture, at least you can be entertained by all of this.
Oh my, yes. It's very, very entertaining. And because they're so busy trying to get more of the fish for each individual bird, you can often get a lot closer and a lot better view of some really nice birds.
Ha ha. So they're distracted then. So you have picked three birds to spotlight this week.
Yep. We have two that live with us all year round and one that likes to be here a lot, but leaves for just a short time in the summer to nest other places. So we'll start off with that one, the Northern Shoveler. This is a duck. It's a dabbler, just like the mallard, which means it's got a really interesting bill that helps it filter out small insects and invertebrates in the water. And so it's often totally with its head underneath and its rump stuck sticking up, trying to get something good to eat in the tidal area.
What kind of a sound does it make?
Well, it's very duck-like, not an aria from the opera.
All right, let's listen. So we have another water bird for our program this week, the great blue heron.
Yes, this is our tallest bird in our town. It's almost 3 feet tall, and it totally loves eating fish. You'll see it mostly with its feet just up in the ankle-high water, waiting for the tide to bring a nice big slurpy fish for it. Most interesting to some folks is that they like to nest in a rookery, in a tree, in a tall, skinny bird with very thin legs. It seems a little strange when you see it standing in a tree.
Is this a bird that travels widely across the world?
Yes, the herons are a worldwide kind of bird. This one, for sure, is all over North America. And the ones that are farther south, some of them they call great herons, those are white. Ours are blue. And even though it's quite chilly, because we have good tides here, we often have them all year round. Even though the water is very cold, there's still unfrozen water for them to fish in.
That's interesting. So we're very lucky, because in a lot of other places, they're gone just visiting for a short time.
Yes, indeed. They do like fresh water a lot, but there's plenty of good food in our salt water here.
Do the great blue herons have a distinctive sound?
Yes, they do. It sounds like a creaking door.
A creaking door. Here we go. So what are the herons doing right now?
Well, most of them have been able to fledge their young. And so just like a lot of other birds, you'll see one adult or one bird that's being begged by others, even though they're standing in the same place where they could put their bill down and catch a fish.
So our last bird is the black turnstone.
Yes, this is a small shorebird that lives with us all winter also. And just like many shorebirds, it likes to have company all the time. So you almost never, ever see one by itself. A dozen or two dozen or even three dozen is not uncommon. They like to be on the little rocky islets and points at low tide because they like barnacles and things that they can pry out of the rock. They're really quite showy when they're flying because of the black and white wing pattern.
So what's distinctive about the turnstone's personality, aside from the fact that they hang out in groups?
Well, you know, I think that's the most important part. They like to talk to each other a lot. So when they're busy eating, they're still talking to each other. I'm here. Are you there? I'm here. I'm there. Are you? What? Where are you? So if you happen to come up on them, you're likely to see them because they're not being silent.
So let's take a listen to the black turnstone. So in the coming weeks, what are your recommendations for where to go to watch birds? Sounds like it's going to pick up here.
Actually, August is when we start to get our fall migration. Some birds will be coming back in small groups. We'll be seeing different kinds of sparrows and shorebirds that we don't have that live here, but they'll be passing through slowly to stock up on some good food as they travel south. So Eagle Beach or the Airport Dyke Trail are excellent places to start to see the beginning of the fall migration.
Okay, so what are your plans for the weekend?
I'm going to go back out and see if I can find the turnstones again, because when the juveniles are in the group, they just watch you and you get a very, very good look at them, especially if you're quiet, just sitting on a rock when they show up.
All right. Well, Brenda, thank you so much for joining us this week to point out a few birds and give us a better appreciation of all the wonderful wildlife that we have in Juneau. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rhonda. Ha ha ha!
Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress, Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, and Klinkit & Haida Social Enterprises. For more information, visit ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon.
And that will do it for today's show. Juno Afternoon is a production of the KTOO Arts and Culture team, which includes Shelley Delaney and KXLL's Chandra Boom, led by Cheryl Snyder. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Also thanks to Matt Fabian for some of the other instrumental pieces in today's show. To listen to interviews, see links to anything that we discuss, or to be on the show yourself, go to our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. Thank you for being here with us today. From all of us at KTOO, Gunash Cheesh, and have a great weekend. Thank you.